Welcome to Driven Radio Show, your home for car talk covering the latest news to the greatest views on the biggest names in performance, sports, and just plain cool driving machines. Let's rev up the conversation. Time for Driven Radio Show.
Hey, all you gearheads and car fiends, welcome to Driven Radio Show, your weekly automotive happy hour. I am Brett Hatfield, here with my co-host and engineer extraordinaire, Mr. Mark Groves.
That's me.
And we are coming to you from Driven Radio Studios, located in the heart of the nation. Where the weather has been really nice and been able to get all the toys out and play
Bit.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude, nice.
I was out running around in that blue Corvette today with the top down. It was dreamy.
I'm not jealous. I just hate you.
No, that's okay. Hey, listen, you've only had 734 different opportunities to buy the car of your dreams in the last 5 years. Speaking of which...
what is the latest, greatest
How goes the car hunt? What have you found? I know you've been burning up Facebook Marketplace.
This past week, two days ago, I talked to, and I just blanked on her name, Marge.
Marge.
I talked to Large Marge up in up in Iowegia.
Marge shot. No, I won't sell it to you.
She's the sweetest lady. It is a 1964 Dodge Custom 880. It looks like a combination if you took a 62 Chrysler and a 63 Imperial. Mm-hmm. Kind of the back window of the Imperial with this interesting slope and pillar that they have on it, and then the basic body shape from the side of a 62 Chrysler and the front end of some boring ass car that was completely forgotten by history.
I thought you were going to say the side of a USS Forrestal.
Pretty close. It the thing had 77 or has 77,000 miles on it. It had gone, they listed it 5 hours before I called.
Wow.
Or before I sent a message, and then the sweet lady called me back and we chatted about it a bit. She already had a guy coming down from Wisconsin.
Said, you're too late.
And he wants to buy it Thursday night. So
what happened to the Mercury?
He didn't want my offer.
Really?
I offered him very
you
close
were
to what he was
asking.
You were
not that far away.
And it was just, he's like, well, that's a little light.
Is it
and
still
I'm like,
on?
Dude, I told you, yeah, it's still out there.
Let's go get it.
Well, what I want to do, what I'm thinking about doing, there's a fellow that I've been watching his, you know, I've been, of course, I'm a Facebook bottom feeder, and I've got these cars that I've saved, pardon me, and the prices keep dropping.
They are
just dropping it. And I now have hope for my bottom feeding sensibilities. I've got my dad's, you know, idea of luxury, which is something big, fat, and
four
way too long.
Four
ashtrays in it. Well, yeah, one in each door.
That's right.
And then I've got my mom's sensibility, which is if you spend a dime, you're dirty and going to hell. So
you got to let go of that.
Between those two, there is a 64 Newport, or not, sorry, not Newport, 64 Chrysler New Yorker Salon.
Mm-hmm.
That's down in Okemoji, Oklahoma, and he's dropped it again. It's gone down $3,000, and I'm like,
okay. We're gonna look at that. I really think we ought to go beat the guy up on the Mercury.
On that Merc, yeah, it's a pretty Merc, and
that
it's still there. It's still
Merc,
the same last price he had.
It's black over red. That is good looking stuff, and it's a breezeway, man. The back window goes down.
Life doesn't get better than a breezeway. I won't kid you.
It's a suburban sedan. The back window goes down.
Yeah, it may have the aerodynamics of a brick,
aerodynamic
sexy
quality.
Back window.
Yeah, aerodynamic qualities of a Carrier air conditioner.
I did have a funny moment, and then I'll shut up. I swear to God.
Nuh-uh.
Because Marge, I was laughing and talking with her, and she's probably got a good 10 years on me. And
she's really old.
Well, that's twice I've hated you because you're right. But Marge, when she was talking about the car and the inside, because the thing is in great condition, it's red on red. It just looks like a big slice of beef rolling down a road.
Cool.
She was mentioned, you know, that back seat's really pretty interesting because she loved the car that she found it at a garage sale.
Of course.
Back in 2006 and just had to have it because it was kind of the car that she and her husband had when they were dating before they got married. La, la, la. She talked about how that back seat, if you look up that rear window, the way it kind of slopes up at the top, you can just see the stars. And I'm like, Marge, what are you telling me on this phone call? Is that your favorite part, is being able to look up at the stars from the backseat?
She started laughing. She didn't have her dress pulled over her head.
Yeah, I could hear her blush in her voice. And I was like, oh, God, this is great. I love that lady.
You're going to find heel marks in the headliner.
I should hope so. That's just prestige. I had such a good time talking to her, besides the fact we'll see Thursday night. If the guy doesn't buy it, she's going to call me and I'll probably go up and look at it Saturday.
I'll be waiting to hear about this, but really, I think you and the guy on that Merc should talk at least one more again.
Part of what got me giddy about it too, this 880 ticket, take a guess at the price. Something that has no rust on it. The interior is in great condition, you know, and it's got touch ups here and there that it needs, but overall good condition.
Okay.
It'll need a carb rebuild and probably brakes.
Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit because I know what your budget is. $8,548. You're kidding.
That's why that 5 hours that son of a bitch sold.
Yeah, screw that Mercury. No, that's not accurate. Marge had like a tax bill or something to pay.
Yeah, I think she and her husband were just done with it. It's ready. It's time to go. They had other things they need to do.
Her accountant says, you know how much money you owe the IRS? $4,800. That's exactly what happened on that deal. That's, you know, tax day is right around the corner. We're within 30 days of that.
We'll see what happens. So.
Absolutely. Okay. Schadenfreude Chronicles update.
Yes.
For everybody who is a, for all of our regular listeners who are probably very irregular, the Schadenfreude Express, my neglected 1999 Mercedes S600, has been at Aristocrat Motors for a little over a week now.
Oh, God. Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yeah, I know. But the service writer and I, he knows this car. He knows the car's history. We've been taking it in there for almost 20 years. So I felt safe taking it back to Matt and saying, hey, man, let's do a nose to tail on it. Let's see everything that's wrong, and then let's see what we are capable of fixing. And many of the needed parts are no longer available through Mercedes-Benz or Mercedes-Benz network, necessitating a search from secondary suppliers, benzworld.org, eBay, and the invaluable help of one of tonight's guests. And we're going to get to him in just a minute.
Awesome.
The keys and the key fobs had to be sourced from a company that refurbishes the key fobs because they aren't available for Mercedes anymore.
Oh,
in fact, I was told the company that made them and had all the patents on them went out of business.
Oh, my God.
Whoops.
You know, I've seen cars like that in the ones I look at. There's this little switch that's usually a turn-on switch on a stove that you put underneath.
Yeah.
You're going to make that thing rock.
Yeah, we're going to get it's going to look like an old Corvecki. So the keys and fobs had to be sourced from that company, and the fobs are not programmed to the car. They have to be programmed later, and I'll figure that out when like Uncle Teddy used to say, we'll drive off that bridge when we come to it. But the fobs come with new blank blades in them that have to be cut for the car. And because it's a European car, the blades are cut on both sides.
Uh-huh.
It's
that's going to be a good one of those.
I found a reconditioned pump that operates the door locks and the soft close feature on the trunk and got that. I'm still searching for a new driver's side seatbelt assembly as the retractor on mine died. And I've pulled it out of the car a couple times before and put it back together. You ever seen one of those, the springs just let loose and come apart?
No, I bet it's exciting, though.
It's damn exciting. I've had it happen at my kitchen table a couple times. The sucker just has legs and jumps off the table and flies everywhere.
It's German engineering. We used to call that a landmine.
Yeah, it's a bouncing Betty is what it is.
Oh, shit. Scully.
Because that doesn't work, it doesn't pull the seatbelt back in, the SRS light on the car, the supplemental restraint system airbag light, is perpetually on.
Oh.
I'm also chasing an ESP charge pump for it, the closest thing to new.
So it reads your mind?
I found a new one.
Okay.
I found a brand new one.
Oh.
In Lithuania for $2,400. You know, I can buy a used Harley.
On Etsy.
I can buy a used Harley Sportster for less.
Oh, my God.
In fact, I know where it is. It's JR's got it down in Wichita. Hi, John. So anyway, I have to thank Matt Miner at Aristocrat Motors for all of his patience help with the car. It's getting a little better every day, and I look forward to stomping down the highway in it soon, because that
I want to do the video of that. I want to see this.
No, I'm going to take you along with me.
I'll be right in the passenger side. Yeah, that's great.
You can,
screaming.
You can sit over there and whimper.
Damn you, Germans!
Our special guests this week are Luke Chinnell and Austin Cooper. Luke is an associate professor in the McPherson College Auto Restoration Program and a famous Bradley GT monger. Luke also hosts the legendary After College Auto Restoration Student Show in May. The legendary cookout, and at which you can find sweaty, not very sober auto journalists cooking sausages. Austin is a student in the McPherson College Auto Restoration Program who has an unnatural obsession with all things Mercedes. In 2022, Austin had a summer internship with the Mercedes-Benz Classic Center in California. Wow. And lately, he has been putting up with me hounding the hell out of him in search for obsolete parts for the Schadenfreude Express.
He's a saint.
Gentlemen, welcome to Driven Radio.
Glad to be here, Brett, as always.
Thank you.
Luke, great to have you back. Wow. Quite a mark on your noggin there, buddy.
I love your third eye.
Care to tell us what happened? Where were you and what did you do?
Well, let me just say that the best plan to do dumb things is in cars because, you know, at least if you drive reasonable cars, they have reasonable padding. I don't always do that in terms of the reasonable cars. But it turns out that when you go to a water park, thought I'd have a nice good time with my son. You know, nice father-son bonding experience. And we'd go down some water slides at the new indoor water park down there in Goddard. No. And we did for about, 45 minutes, after which it turns out I tend to be a little bit competitive. It probably comes from my car streak.
And so I
like to race the other kids down the water slide.
Oh, my God.
I got news for you, kids. So Luke would race you through a car wash.
I have, you know, that countdown comes on the car wash timer and I'm like, let's get out of this thing, but guys, we got laps to make here. So anyway, I thrust myself with quite a bit of vigor using my forearms down the slide. And as I did that, all of a sudden I didn't tell the doctors this, but things went kind of to the stars as my forehead hit something. Right at the top of the tube that goes into the slide.
You found the headache.
And when
bar.
I came down and out the slide, yeah, I did. Yeah, the headache rack gave me the headache. As I got to the bottom, I found that there was blood running down my face and into my eyes, and people were looking at me mighty funny.
And I'm guessing Leo was mildly freaked by seeing Daddy bleed from the head.
I don't know where he was. I was trying to find out some other kid coming out of the water slide.
He was macking on some 12-year-old. Hey, man.
Yeah. Much. I mean, he's my kid, and you know, he's independent. But helpfully, the concession stand lady was also very good at first aid. And so when she came in, she said, oh, you were the guy that had the double cheeseburger, weren't you? And I said, oh, yeah, that was a good cheeseburger. And she said, okay, here's what we need to do. You need to put your head against the wall so I can really press hard to get the bleeding stop. And she did. And it turned out she was pretty good. So,
wow, thank God you didn't have a concussion. Otherwise, she should have been feeling your cerebellum tickling it. Jesus.
So did you make her go into the ladies and get you a sanitary napkin for your forehead, did you just walk in and get it yourself? Right now, I identify as injured.
Well, you know, the funny thing about a forehead wound is you can't see it. You don't really know you have it, but you know you have it when you're around other people because people look at you mighty funny. And I'm kind of used to that, but it turns out the looks you get are quite a bit different than the normal funny looks I get.
Head wounds open a spring.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you just bleed.
Yeah.
And it can look quite exciting.
I bleed like a stuck pig.
You should have seen the other slide. I beat the crap out of that concrete. Yeah, take that.
I bet he never talks about me like that again.
I headbutted a wall, making me the victor.
It's so funny because people were asking me, they were asking me all kinds of detailed questions about, well, what part of the water slide did you hit and how did you hit it? And exactly where did you hit the water slide? And I'm like, I hit my head and then I was in the dark for 30 seconds. I have exactly no idea what my head contacted. I don't know if the tubing was half or 5/8, what the radius was. You don't need to be asking me detailed questions about this. I hit my head really hard.
I have in the dark. I have a mental image of you. Now, I've never seen you not in your boots. So, of course, the mental image includes you in a pair of swim trunks and your boots, sliding into a pool of water, leaking blood from your head, and just kind of floating along like a cheap mat. And
Bless your heart.
I'm sorry, but that's what comes to mind. Wow, man. Wow. Congrats on you.
Yeah, glad you're all right.
I'm happy you're with us tonight. That looks like it would have hurt like hell. I'm certain I would have said lots of things that are not appropriate to say in public.
Hey, Austin, what'd you hit your head on this week? Just kidding. Don't want to know. What'd you smack your noggin on?
Wow. I know what I hit my head on, but we're not going to get into it.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, McPherson College debuted a film called The Path to Pebble about the Mercedes 300S, the auto restoration program restored and took to the Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance, winning an almost unheard of second in class on their first attempt. Can you tell us about the documentary? How was it received? Where did it debut? All that good stuff.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you about the documentary. It came out really, really well. I was really proud of the filmmakers who made it. They were kind of with the team, with all of us, taking shots the entire time. You know, that car, the process was 7 years. And they, early on, I think we identified at the college that we needed to document this in the best possible way. And the film crew did such a good job. They spent so many hours with the team. They identified key students. So the total documentary ran about 30 minutes. But I would guess in total, they had to shoot probably 500 hours of film.
Wow.
I mean, they were just on top of it the entire time. And so the final effort was narrated by Jay Leno, who did just a spectacular job, really carried the narrative, made you feel like you were right there. And really, the documentary was a very, very good portrayal of the student effort, the faculty staff effort, everything that went into making that car happen.
Nice.
So we debuted it here in town. That was what I was so proud of. We debuted it here at the Opera House downtown. Those two showings first, the first one was for the just general automotive restoration program and community. And then the second one was for the McPherson community in general. Which was an absolutely packed house. We held it again at the Opera House, which has three balconies with seating for about 250 people. And it was standing room only and just had a wonderful, wonderful community event.
How nice. Did the General McPherson showing go? Did most of the people who attended that realize how involved the restoration program was? And that, I mean, did they understand what the restoration program was all about and how excellent it really is?
You know, there's this curious thing that it's like people on the coast really seem to understand McPherson. And then people locally in town do also, you know, they interact with their students almost every day. They're around town. They're driving their cars. They're doing their thing and working in the local community, running houses, just generally interacting. But when you get to kind of like Kansas City and Wichita, people don't seem to know about us quite as much. So we just kind of have this strange disconnect. But yeah, the people in town were just wonderful, just absolutely wonderful. Asked great questions. Were so engaged and just loved the documentary. So yeah, it was a really, really strong community building event. Nice. Loved it.
Fantastic. I look forward to seeing it myself. So what has been happening with the Mercedes, the 300S, since the Pebble Beach win? Has it been entered in any other concours or shows? Has it been used for any drives? You guys been taking it to Sonic or to the drive-in?
So a couple things. The first thing I would say, Brett, is that your first opportunity to see the documentary will be at the car show. So we're keeping kind of a very limited engagement on that.
Nice.
And so it's one more reason to come to the car show to watch it and see it again in kind of a community. In terms of the car spent the time after Pebble. It hung out in my shop for about a month, which was fun. You know, there's this like car that you put thousands, we figure about 15,000 hours of work went into that car, all student work. And obviously it did well at Pebble Beach, and it's sitting right there in my shop while we're trying to grind on other things and do crazy tractor stuff and all the things that we do in the drivetrain and chassis lab. It went over to the local museum. So for the better part of the winter, it was stored at the McPherson Museum, where we had an exhibit of college cars, and presented really, really well over there. And it was really a great venue for it. Actually, most of our footage for the documentary was shot in the museum with Amanda Gutierrez, our vice president for automotive restoration, and Michael Schneider, the college president, interviewing right in front of it.
Very cool.
So, yeah. So then we pulled it out and got it back out on the road as it should be, and took it to the Amelia, where we completed the tour with it basically last weekend. So really, it was nice to see it out on the road, completed the tour flawlessly, which was just a testament to not only the quality of the restoration from a cosmetic standpoint, but also just a mechanical quality standpoint.
Fantastic.
Really proud of that.
Very cool. So the auto restoration program recently had a career fair. Some folks that we both know were there. Tell us about the career fair, how things went. I understand there were more jobs than students.
Absolutely. Yeah. The career fair, the thing it highlights is that once you come to see the college and what we do and to meet the students, it really elevates what everybody does in the industry. And so I was really proud to see your friend Rick from Hot Rod Express there.
Nice.
And he did such a nice presentation about his business, showed off all of his stuff and interviewed students. And we both, I think it's fair to say, we both just walked away feeling good about each other and willing to really build some more partnerships. So yeah, I love Rick, Brett. It was so nice of you to make that connection and send him down. It was really, really awesome.
He's a tough guy not to like. Rick is just a genuinely decent human being.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's willing to talk about just about anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And so beyond just Rick, we had, so what happened with our career fair was we were a victim of our own success. We started this thing about 5 or 6 years ago. And at the time we had maybe 5 or 6 employers show up, and it was small enough that everybody could do in-person interviews and kind of circle around and such. And at this point, this most recent career interview, we had over 300 interview spots. And we have on file in our career databases over 300 open positions. And we only have 150 total students over the 4 years of the program. So, you know, we maybe will graduate 30 or 40, and every one of them has their choice of jobs. It's a testament to not only the growth in the industry, but just how willing people are to spend good money and hire professionals to work on old cars. It's just really a sign of the health of the industry, health of the hobby, and whatever you want to call it, the health of enthusiasm for old cars. And so it was a real bright spot just in general for me, and I think everybody involved.
Austin, did you manage to find yourself a new employer at the career fair, or did you already have something lined out?
I didn't. I went to the career fair, but the places I was looking at were only hiring people that were over the summertime, so they didn't want any full-time students quite yet.
Okay, yeah. Just internships, not looking for anybody full-time yet. Luke, quite a bit of money was endowed to the college over the last couple of years, and I realized that the college can say, we've had so much money endowed, but it's going to come
over years' time. It's not there yet. I'm kind of curious what's being planned for the incoming endowment. And I also understand that there's a new building under construction there, but it probably was not part of the endowment that came over the last couple of years. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, you bet. So we somewhat famously had a $1 billion pledge made to the college to build the endowment. And like a lot of endowment funds, those things are typically estate gifts. That's how people typically give for endowment purposes. That's just kind of the way it works.
And $1 billion.
So that was a match.
$1 billion. Isn't that more than the gross national product of Haiti?
We definitely met that pledge, and that commitment happened. And then our donor kicked in and said, "Well, I'm in for another $500 million." So we're now at a $1.5 billion pledged to the endowment over the long term. And I think, Brett, you did a really good job there of explaining or kind of summarizing that. I don't think that that kind of transformational change may even happen in my lifetime. But this is the bridge to the future for the college, for the brand of education we do, and also for just the general ethos of the restoration program and the way we operate and the way that we've built connections in the car world and other places. So I think it's just fair to say that things will continue to be good for everything McPherson College and everything that we do in the world. We're a small college with a big impact, and we will continue to make that big impact as much as we can. Specifically, though, I want to point out that the early phases of this, we got some awesome cars pledged, which is cool.
And
a lot of those are anonymous,
that.
So I can't say too much. Oh. But I will say that one of them is a Bugatti. I'm at liberty to say one of them is a Bugatti. So nice. We're going to be running a Bugatti around McPherson, Kansas at some point, which will be just absolutely beyond awesome.
I'm certain.
So, but when it comes to the cash, one of our commitments, I think, that's been really strong in the last few years, and we want to continue, is just making students graduate debt-free.
Yes.
Making sure that they're on the path to a solid future that doesn't involve giant student loans. Yeah. And so that involves some of their skin in the game, but it also just, it's on us. It's really on us to carry their legacy forward and make good alumni out of them.
Getting to the really good stuff now. We're about a month and a half from the annual College Auto Restoration Students or CARS show. Do you have any idea what we can expect this year? Is there any word on the special displays? I know it's early. I haven't even gotten my invitation yet, so you probably don't have a count on things, but I'm wondering if you got any insight.
It'll be awesome as always. That's all I know. I don't really know what the feature cars will be. So, it should be awesome. I mean, we have all the same things planned as always, and it will be probably as bigger and badder as it's always been.
I'm
really hoping we have a blue 65 Corvette.
It'll be there. It'll be there. That it's running this year. My mom hasn't backed into it. It's not near her house, and I'm driving that bad boy down. It will be there this year. The really important question is, what have you prepared for us at the post-show cookout?
This is the riveting part of it.
This is the important stuff. How many people were there last year? Do you expect a similar turnout this year? Are we going to have an open bar again?
Oh, God.
How much do you have set aside for the Sausage King's triumphant return?
Well, I think the Sausage King is going to bring the open bar again, is he not?
Yes, he is.
Perhaps the Sausage Queen.
Yes. Yes. We are, in fact, bringing two cars, and one of them will be hauling all of the open bar equipment.
Madam Mix-a-Lot.
She plays to her strengths. We will be down early to help her prep for everything and help get the ribs ready, do the dry rub, and anything else you need.
Help me rub my meat.
Yeah, well, welcome to Luke's work.
Going in dry.
He just wants to put his meat in your mouth.
Oh, God.
There you go. How many people did we have last year? Wasn't it around 180 or something like that?
Right. Yeah, about 175. And, I would expect about the same this year. It's not so much about the people. It's about the cars, right? Yeah. I mean, I didn't... EB110 Bugatti on the lawn, Duesenberg J, 1908 Peerless. I mean, just some good iron, and people were giving rides and having fun.
Nice.
That's all you can ask for.
Well, and like I said in the opening, lots of sweaty, overfed, overserved car fiends having great conversations. That is why the car show weekend is my favorite weekend of the year. It just doesn't get any better for car folks. So, yeah, really, absolutely looking forward to it. Austin, you've been putting up with me pestering the hell out of you to find obsolete parts for the Schadenfreude Express, and you've been sitting there very patiently, and I'm grateful for both. How did you become fascinated with all things Mercedes?
So, I've always been into cars, but for me to actually appreciate cars is when I got my driver's license and I could experience every car for its own. For instance, my father had a diesel truck that I used to mess around in all the time. That had one characteristic. And then as for my official first car, it was a Mercedes diesel. It was my great aunt's car, actually. So it's been in the family all of its life. And that really gave me an appreciation for quality build and, just having an overall style to a vehicle.
What was the plus about driving this diesel Mercedes and this older diesel Mercedes?
Well, if people tailgated him, he could stick his foot in it.
And just roll goal, baby.
How do you say that in German? Roll in the goal?
First of all, I have a sticker on the back that says, respect your elders, and there's a Mercedes star in it to begin with. So we got to start off there, all right? As for my oldest diesel, everybody tailgates me, or they just move around because I can't get off the line quick enough for them. But apart from that, yeah, it's all about how you tune them as well. You can have them go so freaking fast, or you can have them just be regular. But I am more of a traditional person.
Nice, nice.
So, how did you find the restoration program at McPherson?
I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't really looking for the automotive program because I didn't know it. That there was a program out there at the point of time. So I was looking more at colleges on the West Coast than anything else. And I started picking around a little bit more because I do like school, yes, but I wasn't going to be going to school for something I actually enjoyed. So I was poking around on the web and whatnot and going around on Facebook, and I found the college. I was making sure I was credited and whatnot, and I saw I could get a 4-year degree out of there and get basically what I look at as a trade experience, but with a bachelor's degree.
Nice.
So summer 2022, you did an internship at the Mercedes-Benz Classic Center in California. What did you do? What did you learn? What did you take away from that experience?
So, that year of 2022 is when Mercedes-Benz Classic Center was moving everything from their Irvine shop to their new place, which is basically a portion of the VPC of Mercedes-Benz. At that point, I was assisting in setting up the shop and whatnot, making sure everything goes where it needs to go. And I had to do that twice because we were not painting the floor. We were refinishing the floor and getting everything ready. So once we set everything up, it was a game of taking it back out again and then letting everything, let the process continue. And then once you put it back in, everything started going back to normal, luckily. But during that whole experience, I was moving a lot of equipment around. I was setting up TVs, the lobby. I was even working on a car when I had the time when everything was finished, luckily. So I got to get experience of everything within setting up the establishment and working on a vehicle. as well.
Well, speaking of working on cars, did you have a hand in the 300S project?
Yes, sir, I did. Towards the tail end of it, I was more focused on collecting the K-Max screws and pieces, the correct material that Mercedes-Benz uses to make sure that they're clean. We can refinish them and make them to what they were back in the 50s when the car was originally came off the line.
So you mentioned that you have a West Coast Mercedes and also a Mercedes in Kansas. How many Mercedes do you own?
Well, so I officially own four of them. The one that it's a split one is we owned it, me and two of my other friends, because we all went, it was $500 car. So who wouldn't buy a $500 Mercedes? Well, we found out we wouldn't get the keys for it. So we made a key that night, the same night out of the glove box key. We had to take apart the carburetor about five times because the sediment was just continuously being pumped in there, even though we had filters, like three inline filters from the tank. That didn't help by any stretch. And initially, the gas lines were plumbed in reverse. So we were feeding the carburetor through a return back to the tank, and then it was backwards. So if you catch my drift, the car wouldn't go faster than 35 miles an hour. We were trying to figure out why that wasn't going so. But eventually we figured out and saw, dumbass, come on. So we corrected that and whatnot. And the car, I'd say we got the car up to a good speed, to say the least, after that. But apart from that, it took a long time to get up to that speed. But that was just for reassurance that we had it correct.
I bet you know what a return fuel line looks like now.
Well, for a Stromberg carburetor, I was surprised that there was a return line. But to each their own, you learn everything. You learn something new every day.
Okay, so you've got split ownership on a $500 Mercedes. What are the other three?
So the other four, my first car was a 1992 300D 2.5 turbo, which they sent a limited number amount of those cars over to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I wanted a summer project when I was in high school. So I found a 1958 180D with, I think it was 78,000 miles at the time. And it was a pretty good car. It's all original. I still drove it. I even drove it today, believe it or not. And then after that one, I wanted to bring a project back to Kansas. So I bought a 280 SEL, which is a long wheelbase car.
Yeah.
And that car is hovering just north of 400,000 miles with original engine and transmission and whatnot. So it's been a pretty good car. As for the body work, though, I need to get that all sorted out and whatnot. But as for mechanical aspect, it leaks all at once. I'll let it leak because it deserves to leak. But when it comes
to the right,
I've already replaced. Yeah, it deserves to leak at this point. So at this point, I've replaced all the steering components, suspension and whatnot. I just got to get the interior done, as I've already started on the wood. I'm just trying to find some time to actually finish it up. And then as for my latest purchase, it's a 1979 300SD. I bought it with 89,000 miles right now, and the odometer is currently showing 92,000.
What's your fascination with Mercedes diesels?
I like great fuel economy, and I like a car that has long, known for its reliability, apart from the 350SD or SDL, apart from that. But I like a good car that has reliability, efficiency, and you can drive it anywhere.
All right,
it's a good classic car. You can take anywhere you want. You're always going to get a nice look everywhere you go.
Well, we have an SL500 that's been a fairly reliable car. It really has been. The S600 was neglected for years before I got it. It sat in a warehouse and didn't go anywhere. And it's made the resurrection a little challenging. I still have faith that car will come back and be great. What are some of the more, in your opinion, what are some of the more reliable Mercedes classics?
So going on to what you were saying with your S600 sitting in a warehouse and whatnot, my 1958 sat in a warehouse since 1978, and it was dug out in, I believe it was 2016, 2017. And of course, what's needed on those cars as they sit is the drums normally freeze, so you have to redo the entire brake system. The fuel lines degrade, but it's diesel, so it's just going to saturate with diesel, and the tires are always going to be flat, per usual. But luckily, it started actually right up, believe it or not, after it sat all that time. But apart from that, when it comes to classic Mercedes, what you want to look at is cars that don't have, first of all, biodegradable wiring harnesses. That was a common issue between with Mercedes-Benz in the 90s is they would degrade too quickly before they even got to the junkyard.
Yeah, pre-1995.
While you were driving them.
I think the wiring sheath was made from soybeans.
It was made of soy, yeah, it was. So the cars would have these check engine lights for God knows what reason, or they would run horrible, but it wouldn't have a check engine light and it wouldn't tell you what the issue was. So either way, you got screwed because you have to replace the entire wiring harness. But as for what you want to look for in a classic Mercedes is just a good, dependable car. Cars you even still see on the road to this day. I know plenty of people that drive old 123 chassis, 300Ds or 240Ds for that matter, with 400, 600, 700,000 miles on them without an issue. Wow. Even the wagons, they're great cars.
What do you think the odds are I can get a W140 to run for 300,000 or 400,000 miles?
It depends what engine's in it. I mean, for your S600, you're going to be going through coil packs like no tomorrow.
No, right? I already replaced a bunch of those. I already replaced them all.
And the thing is, they're not cheap to begin with.
No,
they
aren't.
You have to buy one bank at a time.
No.
And it's expensive.
I told one of my daughters that car was the reason she was going to go to community college.
Yeah. I would believe it. They are pretty expensive to maintain, but nonetheless, not more expensive to maintain than a traditional 600
from
60s, 70s. Yeah,
that's correct.
That is actually my favorite car. But apart from that, yeah. As for the 140 chassis, the best, the most mileage you're going to get out of a 140 is if you get the S320 with the M104 engine. They're really good and they're really easy to work on because there's so much room in that engine bay.
Yeah, there really is.
You can literally stand in that engine bay with how much room there is.
You can't do that with a V12. You can't get a deck of cards in that sucker.
Well, you can balance a quarter on top of the engine, but you can't do anything else much less.
Yeah, that is absolutely true.
You guys are all Mercedes people, so why is it that the and this is side note, why is the SLK's what is it, the 230s? I like the compressors, the roadsters. I think they look cool. Believe it or not, I like a Mercedes. However, they're really not expensive. Why?
There's a good reason for that.
Yeah, and that's what's got me concerned is somebody who doesn't know why. Why? Why are they so cheap? There's a 99 for, you know, $5,900, $6,000 with, you know, 70,000 miles on it. I'm like, why?
Austin, do you want to tell them or do you want me to?
Break my heart.
You know, honestly, I never had a real big thing with those SLKs, but I do know the hydraulic tops are just as horrible as the R230s are with hydraulic fluid going anywhere or getting stuck in a position for whatnot. But honestly, for a car like that, I just look at it as a overly complicated Mazda Miata.
you're better off getting a Miata. You just flat are. Austin isn't going to tell you this, but I will tell you, and it's a saying that applies to lots of cars, not just Mercedes, but it does apply to Mercedes. The most expensive car you'll ever get is a really cheap Mercedes. that applies for Porsches, Ferraris, Maseratis, about anything European. It also goes for Corvettes. You buy a really cheap Corvette, it's going to bite you over and over and over again. Now,
unless it's a C5 Corvette.
Yeah,
those hold out for the most part.
Yeah, buy a cheap
plastic stone.
Buy a cheap C4 and take one look at the interior, and you'll see what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, done. Austin. Now, here's the final question we do with everybody, and at least once a year, I make Luke tell me the story about the Bell's Palsy pirate. It is absolutely hysterical. Oh, it never doesn't make me laugh. I'm sure everybody who listens to the show and has heard it more than once is probably tired of me begging for the story. Luke, I'm going to make you tell me again when I come down for the car show, just because it tickles me. But Austin, what is the dumbest thing you have ever done in a car?
I wouldn't say it's rather dumb. I'd say it's rather questionable.
It's semantics.
It's questionable. So with the laws in California, you can have a car, a classic car, you can drive around or anything. So the only checks that you need to do in the state here is get your car smogged. That doesn't matter if it has headlights, it has blinkers, it has a door, or if it has a bumper. All right, for that matter. So during this time, when I just about got my when I got my Ponton after that, one of my friends at a local shop of mine told me to take his 300 on an hour to go to a paint shop because he was taking it apart for it to go to paint. So I look at the car. It has four wheels. It has a steering wheel. It has a shifter, and it has an engine. No interior. So I look at it and I look around to see what I can find, to sit on, to say the least. I find a milk crate. All right. So I put the milk crate right about there and I think a yellow book as well, so I can actually see over it. And I had to drive down one of the busiest intersections in the Carmichael area, or Sacramento area, I should rather say. About 2 miles down the road to get to this paint shop. And the looks I got were very questionable. And without seatbelts or anything could have happened. So that was my most questionable time driving a vehicle.
I got nothing to say, man. That sounds like a dune buggy to me.
it was less than that, I'll tell you that. There was no cage or anything to help me stay in that thing.
You know, I saw a Franken Ferrari driving into work yesterday morning. It was, fairly nice. It was brisk, but nice. And I pull up on the back end of this thing, and there's basically the whole middle section of this car is missing. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? I can't, it's low and wide, and there's lots of putty, etc. And when I finally, it pulled on the left, and I'm still heading to work, but I did kind of rubberneck a bit. And this thing had like Diablo-ish sides. But the guy was sitting in with just a steering wheel and a seat, a chair.
Are you sure it was a Ferrari?
I don't know what the hell this thing was.
Because that sounds like a Testarossa, and those are worth enough money. People take care of them.
Not this one, man. I don't know what kind of jungle gym was going on underneath the body of this thing, but I couldn't figure it out. And I'm like, it looks like a whole bunch of different cool cars parts. all glued together like the old models I used to build as a kid.
One piece at a time, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
One piece at a time.
Johnny Cash saying about this is his sports car.
That's right.
It was a hot mess, and I was going to get a picture of it, but I was driving and I'm a safe driver. So, but what a nightmare that was. It kind of reminds me of it.
I love it. We've been speaking with Luke Chennell and Austin Cooper of McPherson College's Auto Restoration Program. Luke and Austin, please tell us where we can find you online and on social media.
Starting with you, Luke.
So you can find me on Facebook. I'm wide open and will accept your friend request at Luke Chennell. And my email address, which I'm always happy to correspond with, is Chennell, that's Chennell, at McPherson.edu.
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram. My name is Austin Cooper on Facebook, and my Instagram handle is Super Turbo Cooper.
Super Turbo Cooper.
There you go.
Nice.
And
the Turbo Kid.
You can find the restoration program and everything about McPherson College at McPherson.edu. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us. As always, great to see Luke.
Yeah.
That
Jeez, that
looked that like that looks like that freaking hurt
forehead.
Man.
That looked like it hurt bad, man.
Now, unfortunately, he got hit in the front, so you know there's no way to kind of flip that thing around. Because when I was a teenager, I thought myself pretty decent on the diving board and at this Roark Motor Lodge in Branson, Missouri, where I was a bus boy.
Roark.
The owner's son was my age, and he would let us play in the pool for the lodge, and it had a couple of diving boards. And I thought I had an idea of how to do a half gainer. Didn't realize how close I was getting to that board, though. And I was out there doing my thing, and it was a kind of a cool day. I was by myself. There was one family out there. I jumped on that board, did my real quick flip to get upside down, and the next thing I know, I'm paddling real weird toward the side of the pool. I don't know what happened until I grabbed the...
Do you have blood trailing you?
Oh, dude, I look like a movie. Because I nicked the very top of my head against the edge of the board, which ripped my scalp, and I was bleeding like a sieve. It was awesome. Oh. I go walking by the units to go back to the restaurant bathroom and find out what's going on, and I just, blood is pouring down my face. I look like a Stephen King movie. The family was like, my God, are you all right? I'm like,
Carrie got to me.
Are you kidding? Look at these pecs. I'm just fine. And I go up there, and that's when I got a little scared, but the hospital was about a football field away. So I walked up to the hospital by myself and, you know, kept some towels on top of my head because it was just gushing, and got some stitches, and then started 10th grade without being able to wash my hair for a month. It was awesome. Wow. I looked like a tragic story stem to stern. And combing it, by the way, was a real trick, because when you catch those stitches in your goody brush, you say things that your mom's not supposed to hear.
Yeah, no kidding. I think I was 11 or 12, probably 11. And my mom was cooking fried potatoes on the stove and, you know, had a lid over the skillet.
Yeah.
And they were smelling pretty good. And I wanted to get a little closer sniff.
Oh, no.
Well, you see where this is going.
Yo.
Don't get ahead of me, though.
Your mom hit you.
Whole skillet full of potatoes. I got my nose down there and pulled the lid off and inhaled real deeply, and I steam burnt the inside of my nose and my sinuses.
Dude, no.
Oh, yeah. And you can't know how bad it hurts to burn the inside of your nose and up your nasal passages and all that stuff. And a few days later, I'm at the pool with my cousins, and I used to be able to do a 1.5 off the high dive. And I go up on that high dive, and, you know, you do your bounce, you get your jump right, jump up, do the 1.5. I don't quite make it all the way around.
Oh.
And I hit face first. I got about a 1.25 in. It wasn't quite all the way around. But having previously steam burnt everything up my schnoz
and then you just shoved a whole bunch of... A highly chlorinated water up there.
Oh, no. It's like having a power washer jammed up your nose.
Oh, God. Oh.
And you want to talk about the most epic bloody nose at the swimming pool. Oh, my word.
I was spraying the town.
And people who didn't like me were saying, oh, God, are you okay? Can we get you some help? So I didn't hit the diving board, but it sure looked like I had.
If you see brains, let me know.
Yeah,
that's all I asked.
They were leaking right out my nose. And I wonder why I have sinus problems now.
Yeah, who knew?
That's right. So, no, didn't smack my head. Looked
Poor
just
Luke.
As bad, though.
Yeah.
Looked just as bad. Poor Luke, man. Right in the forehead and going down a water slide. And like I said, I can picture him spitting out into the little catch pool at the bottom, just floating away. And
you know what, Luke, by the way, you owe me, because I decided not to take a big blown up picture of your friggin' eye of the Sauron, third eye Gorgon looking deal you got going on, buddy.
Luke uncovered his third eye.
Yeah, holy hell.
Oh, poor guy. I just feel terrible.
I could see his memories from here. It was not great.
That looked like it really smarted. So we feel for Luke. Please get well soon.
Yeah.
Keep that cold pack on your head, whatever you got to do.
Do what you got to do.
Man, that was. And thanks for being on. I'm surprised he can speak a coherent sentence. Because that was like a day or two ago.
You are not wrong.
Wow. That just, I feel for him. I really do. And, it, you know, you see somebody who's got some kind of an injury and you just cringe. And
that's
you get
one
that
of them.
Cold chill down your back. And, oh, man. Luke, buddy, sorry it happened. I feel for you, pal.
Love you, bud.
Get well soon. Yeah, love you, pal. Thank you so much for spending time with Driven Radio and letting us gross you out. Speaking about injuries and all kinds of stuff, man.
Just one time I fell off my bicycle.
Yeah, my leg fell off, but I glued it back out.
Yeah, broke right through the skin. You should see it. We hung a Christmas ornament off it. It was awful.
Terrible stuff. We love what we do.
And you may not, but we do.
Y'all certainly don't, but we really enjoy it.
We're all over it.
And we wouldn't be able to do it without the support of our listeners, you poor folks.
Both of you.
You can find us online at DrivenRadioShow.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Driven Radio Show. And on LinkedIn as the Driven Radio Show podcast.
Nice.
We have discovered that download numbers we get from our provider represent a small fraction of the listens the show gets, and that streaming listens are not included in that count. Furthermore, iTunes doesn't report jack, not downloads or streaming numbers. So if you're listening, please do us a favor, download the show so we can see how many people are out there tuning in. If you have a story you would like to tell or someone you would like us to interview, please contact me at Brett@DrivenRadioShow.com. Not info@DrivenRadioShow.com. I've had a lot of people get hold of me and say that bounces them.
Oh,
that's because there is no such critter.
Sorry.
Brett@DrivenRadioShow.com. I am Brett Hatfield for Mark L. Groves.
Yep.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time here on Driven Radio.